still offer no explanation for the series of five deaths which occurred early today at the St. George Medical Center in Santa Monica. Officers are still working on a round-the-clock schedule. Informed sources at the hospital allege the deaths resulted from attacks by an infant born only today in a mutated form, but officials declined comment. The station has acquired exclusive information naming Mr. and Mrs. Frank Davis of West Los Angeles as the parents of the infant in question. The whereabouts of the newborn child are not known.
They named us. The bastards, they named us.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop. And with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
I'm so glad that I'm not a parent. Well, a real parent. I'm a step-parent.
You married into it in my progress.
Child, yes. My child can be demonic sometimes, though.
The guy from Lost.
What?
In The Stepfather. I don't remember the actor's name, but he's in The Stepfather, and he's the guy from Lost, and he's evil, and he kills families when they don't live up to his expectations.
Huh.
I had forgotten about that one, but yes, no, I'm not that kind of stepfather.
Yes.
And Trish Coughlin.
So glad never had a baby. This is my greatest fear.
Yeah, it's almost like Jay picked this on purpose to torture Trish.
Almost. Demon children, demon babies, greatest fear. Love sharks, love snakes, still pretty scared of spiders, but we'll take a spider over a baby.
I know this fear, so I actually did do this on purpose to torture you.
But you know what? For both of them, I did enjoy them. I mean, for
really?
The fear factor. Yeah, they're
both
dumb as hell.
You know, well, that I can agree with. Dumb as fuck.
Yeah, dumb as hell. I will say the one thing, and we'll get into it, but the second one was what I expected the first one to be more like.
I can see that. I think you might be onto something there. Is the first one was a little smarter than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one was just dumb garbage. Stupid garbage.
Yeah, I'd agree there's actually some depth to the first one as this commentary about the fears, the natural fears of being a parent, of having a child, that nervousness that's always there of maybe something going wrong in the childbirth. And this is also a commentary coming out of the 50s and 60s as we learn what prescription drugs can do to pregnant women, mm-hmm. like the thalidomide babies that were born deformed because of that particular drug. So this was still very prevalent, especially in the 70s. I'd say there's zero subtext in the remake.
None.
No.
Like I said, when I was texting you, I was like, this is an exact example of how not to make a remake. Take a movie that had some good things and then completely ignore those good things when you're remaking the movie.
Yeah.
All of the good things from the original.
Well, what I kind of expected is like you have the tagline where it's like the baby it kills when it's scared and it gets scared a lot. But I sort of expected it to be about the parents with this newborn that was like a killing machine. But the first movie, they don't spend any time with the baby until the very end. Like they don't even really meet it till much later, which I wasn't expecting.
No. And I actually kind of like that because it fed part of the story about that connection between a parent and their children. Right? And the child was trying to get home to mom and dad. And it just totally strengthens that sort of part of the story and makes it clearer as the story goes on.
See, I had a weird thought about it and I got confused at the very end because it showed that like the demon baby went to the kid's school, his sibling's school. And I, for some reason, had this whole thing in my head and it's about, you know, sibling rivalry. And I thought the baby was going to try and take out the sibling because, I mean, a sibling's just something that you fight for resources from your parents. And I thought it was going to kill the older brother.
I kind of thought that too. And it wasn't until the scene in the basement where you realize that, no, he was looking for his brother because he wanted to get to his family.
Yeah, that's true. That's when I realized. But yeah, it was. I was confused at the point. I'm like, oh God, the kid's going to die. Because they spent a lot of the movie keeping him out of harm's way. Like they had the friend taking him fishing. They had the friend looking after him. I thought that was the reason. They really leaned into it and then it didn't come out that way.
Yeah, and clearly the remake didn't know what to do with him either because, hey, let's throw him in a wheelchair so the jeopardy for that child will go up, except he was just a prop through the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't play at all. Didn't really matter. He didn't even need to be there.
Right? It should have been more. Like, I was expecting more between the two siblings.
Well, he wasn't actually a sibling. He was actually an uncle.
Oh, yeah. An uncle. Remake. Yeah. Sorry. It would have been like, yeah, with his family. Like, I would have liked to have seen the child struggle where he's like, going, you know, it is a baby and he is cute. And I don't know how to deal with this.
Yeah. I mean, what was the point of making, like, having younger parents and making Frank the older brother to this kid and having his parents die when they were young? Like, what was the point of that being even in the movie? It made no sense. It was useless backstory that didn't matter.
I think it was just a convenient way to make him paralyzed.
But why was the character even in the movie? Because they didn't use him. I mean, he was there to fill out 10 more minutes in a script that they clearly didn't have enough to work with on.
Yeah, yeah. If there was some sort of emotional arc there, some traumas they need to get over with their own parents, with the accident or whatever. But none of that is explored. So why tell us? Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and it's only an hour and 20 minutes. It's not like they didn't have some room to fill out these characters a little bit and make them more interesting. So you have something invested in them.
Yeah. I believe like the mother, I found it interesting to go through her story where she spends a lot of time covering up her baby's murders.
That was fucking stupid.
Well, I thought that was kind of interesting because I'm like going, okay, A, she doesn't question it. That's the dumb part. But it would be if they had delved into the fact that like, okay, she's hormonal, she's a new mother, or she felt she was never supported by her parents or something where she's like, I'm going to love this baby no matter what. Like something sort of indicating that she would do anything for this child. That might have helped.
Yeah, they leaned into that aspect from the original because the mother was sort of connected to this child and she didn't care that it was killing people. It was her child and she wanted to protect it. But it was well developed and you saw that sort of building through the whole movie. Whereas this one is just sort of like, oh, look, I found my baby chewing on a dead bird. No big deal. No, you shouldn't do that. Finds a dead cat in the crib, or rabbit, gets rid of the rabbit, doesn't think, well, hey, maybe I should maybe have somebody take a look at my child and see what's wrong with it. But no,
right?
It's, okay, let's cover that up. Then it kills a person, covers that up. Then it kills her best friend and her boyfriend, covers that up. It went from being, okay, I kind of get it, to, okay, now it's gone too absurd.
Well, I mean, it did start out murdering everybody in the operating room when she gave birth. So,
right?
You kind of glazed over the biggest portion of both movies where the kid just eviscerates everybody in the room except for mom.
Yeah. Well, I didn't gloss over it so much as that part wasn't relevant to her growth, at least not at the beginning, because she doesn't remember the birth until like she starts having flashbacks. But yeah, as far as her actual experiences, that sort of chain of events, at some point, any sane person is going to go, my kid is fucked up. I need to get some help.
Do you think they were trying to lean into some of those after effects of birth, like postpartum depression, but the opposite of that? I don't know. There was, because she was so broken after that experience. And maybe it was a PTSD thing.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's what they were going for. They didn't do it well, but I think maybe that's what they were going for.
Possibly. And I was kind of thinking that myself as I was watching it, but they had 80 minutes and they could have gone another 20 and really given us something to grab onto for that character.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they made the mother the focal point rather than the father, which was an interesting change, but then they did nothing with it.
They do throw little, it's weird. Like it seems like they did have something built in the back, but they didn't do anything with it. Like there's a throwaway line where she was like an army brat. And I mean, you could figure out like, well, she wants a family so badly because she just needs stability she never had in her previous life. And she's not that stable herself. There's little hints like they tried doing something and then just didn't.
Yeah, yeah, Sam, you might have been right that it needed more time, but at the same time, that 80 minutes felt like it was a week. So, like, I don't know if I wanted another 20 minutes. I couldn't wait to get to the end of this fucking movie.
Well, yeah. But I think an extra 10 minutes that made the film more interesting would have made a 90-minute film watchable versus 80 minutes of unwatchable garbage.
Yeah. Sometimes with answers, if I get 10 minutes more of answers, I'm like, oh, okay, so the rest of the dumbness doesn't seem so dumb, and I'm okay.
Yeah, subpar writing aside, there was some pretty flat performance in here as well as the bad writing. But I think that's also even undermined even more, because when I was watching it, I couldn't help but think the entire remake was ADR'd. The whole thing sounded like it was all overdubbed. It was synced fine, but it sounded like it was all overdubbed in a studio, and certain actors specifically, because I know they are foreign actors, and I bet you they had different actors voicing them over to make them sound American.
Yeah. And especially the sergeant.
The sound quality was all over the place too, because at the beginning of the movie, I'm like, oh man, I can't stand Bijou Phillips' voice in this.
Yep.
But then they fixed something in the sound, and she started to sound better, more like what I'm used to hearing her as. And then later on in the movie, it got that weird squeakiness again. I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah, what's that? It's part of the unnervingness was at the beginning was like going, it sounds like a 10-year-old's having a baby, and I don't feel comfortable with that. Like, the voice is just too high. I'm like, she just seems like a child.
Because you get that initial voiceover at the beginning before we actually see her. So I thought we were dealing with high school kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And dumb ones at that. Sorry, I'm going to say dumb a lot in this episode, just to be clear.
Oh, totally get it. You know, it could have been an interesting move if it had have been high school. It really would have.
Well,
because it would have been the teen pregnancy and the being like, wanting to keep your child is hard at the best of times as a teen mom. But add this to it? Holy crap.
And well, and they were trying to lean into that a little bit by making her college level and having her life kind of come apart because of the pregnancy. She was near graduating and getting her, I don't even know what she was in for, to be honest, but
it was French poetry or something.
Yeah,
like that.
She was working on her thesis, so she was near graduation, and it was all starting to crumble apart after. I mean, granted, this kind of pregnancy just broke her, and even if you had a normal baby, that requires so much extra time out of your life. So I can't even imagine trying to write a thesis over this.
Right. And they do talk about her not, like, at the very end, she's like, I can't get him to sleep. I'm like, but he was sleeping a lot during the whole movie. So, I mean, if it had been a thing where he was a creature where it was hard to get them to sleep, that would also be something that would be interesting to dig into, where they're like, oh yeah, the baby sleeps at weird times. Like, it's not a normal baby sleep.
Well, they had a lot of those scenes where they look into the bassinet or the crib, and you kind of get the impression that the baby's awake every time they look, but you never see the baby.
Yeah.
Right? Or rarely see the baby. So you don't know if the baby's awake or not. Clearly, they didn't want to have a baby on set all the time, and that's why they did it the way they did. But if you had established that by every time they go to look at the baby, it's lying there with its eyes open, that would have been fucking creepy.
Yes.
It would have created some really good tension.
Yeah, absolutely. they were taking a page out of Larry Cohen's playbook by keeping the baby into the shadows. Now, I mean, the remake, they made the baby look normal and human, where it was totally not that. It was very monstrous in the Larry Cohen version. But yeah, if it had been awake all the time or whatever, I mean, we did see brief flashes of their special effects baby that it would have worked just fine in the bassinet, but, or the crib, and you could have easily had a human double in there as well. Mm-hmm. If it's just lying there, I mean, especially when they said the baby was oversized at birth anyway. I think they said it was like 14 pounds, which was crazy.
Yeah.
So like a big baby. So you could have had a stunt baby, as it were, to do those scenes.
Yeah, an older stunt baby.
It would have been easy enough, and I think it would have created that tension and set that I can't get it to sleep line. It would have actually worked instead of just sort of being yet another throwaway line in a movie full of throwaway lines.
Yeah, and I find the idea of, like, if it looks normal normally and then it becomes monstrous, that's scarier, I feel. So it would have really ratcheted up the tension, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. As I said, both these movies had a lot of potential. Like I said earlier, is the remake ignored a lot of, well, pretty much everything that made the first one at all interesting. Like Jay already mentioned the subtext of parenthood. There's also that subtext of the environment, and there's that great scene
Yeah.
The only part of the beginning of the movie that was actually interesting is that scene in the waiting room where the pest control guy says, yeah, we came up with this new pesticide to kill roaches, but it did the exact opposite. It created a stronger, newer breed of cockroach that's even harder to kill. And I thought that was a great setup for the rest of the story.
Yeah.
And then they did a great job of tying that into that birth control drug that is clearly the culprit of what's happened here, is they've created an evolved child, but it's monstrous in its evolution.
Like, I mean, most babies, like the evolution of it is, I guess, like with babies, we give birth a little earlier. It's the monstrousness of the babies is it's now so evolved it can like get out of the uterus and is ready to rock and roll. A regular baby does not do that.
And kill adult humans.
Yes.
Let's not forget that part. That's a pretty amazing thing. Not a good thing, but it's pretty amazing that it could do that right from birth.
Right? Because normally you spend all that time, like, months and months before it even does anything.
All right, well, let's take a break here and go to the It's Alive 1974 movie trailer. We'll be right back with more.
It's alive. It's alive.
Can you hear me? It can't be saved. It's gotta die.
It's alive. It's alive.
Why are you so anxious to be the one to do it?
It's alive.
Doctor! Damn, it's alive here!
It's alive.
Now, nobody knows how this thing happened. It's really a matter of speculation, and I think perhaps that's for the best. After all, if we find out that the cause is medication that we manufacture, and it was administered over a long period of time on it...
What do your interests recommend?
Absolute destruction of this thing.
It went down the storm drains.
That's how it can travel the length of the city without anybody seeing it.
Don't touch me. Don't you touch me. They stole my baby. Come on, get down. Did you see it? Did you see it? What does it look like?
What are you afraid of?
Get those cameras out of my face, please. I got no comment. I had nothing to do with this.
Will you get that thing out of my face? Get out of the way!
He could have killed you. You know why he didn't? You know why he didn't kill you?
Look out, Charlie!
You've never been exposed to radioactivity in radioactive material or undergone extensive x-rays.
No, Doctor, I told you.
Can't rule out genetic damage.
My department has already cautioned the police about excessive violence. If it could be dispatched with a bullet, or better still, some kind of a gas. Undoubtedly, it is very small, and any kind of bodily harm, especially from gunshots or explosives...
In other words, you want me to sign away the body, is that it?
Well, it's your right. After all, you are the child's father.
You.
No. Stop firing!
That was a trailer for It's Alive 1974, written and directed by Larry Cohen, who we've talked about lots and lots of times. Well, maybe not lots, but quite a few. First time was in episode 6, which was the debut of our own Jeff Omega.
Who's not here this week, but it was the stuff.
That's right. And then it would be a while, but 190 episodes later in episode 196.
Flying whatever it is.
Cue the winged serpent.
That's what it was. I just wrote down Q and then I completely forgot the rest.
That's all right. And then again, a little more recently, like really recently, episode 286.
He wrote Body Snatchers.
That's right. The 1993 version. He was one of many people involved in that script.
And did you get his acting credit?
I didn't do the acting credit, but I think I remember spotting him in something we did.
Yeah, it was actually really recent as well. He was in Spies Like Us.
That's right.
281, yeah.
That was a lot of directors that made cameos in that movie.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. yeah, that's why I thought for sure you'd grab it. But it's okay. I did.
Usually with directors, I don't go past directing. Music really stood out to me on this one, so I got to give a shout out to Bernard Herrmann yet again. We've done quite a few movies recently where Bernard Herrmann has done scores, and I am firmly in love with some of these scores, even a mediocre movie like It's Alive. Just stood out right away, and if you've listened to a lot of them, I mean, there's those certain identifiable, really bassy notes at the beginning, and it really makes this feel like a classic monster movie. Now, Bernard Herrmann would pass away only a year later, so this was one of his final projects, even though to this day people are still using Bernard Herrmann pieces for scores, and he's still getting movie credits.
I'm just glad this wasn't his like last official score.
Yeah.
And that he went out with Taxi Driver, which was a far superior movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this was maybe a favor for a friend type of thing. Cause, I imagine even at that late stage of his career, Bernard Herrmann probably wasn't cheap. Like this guy did lots of great movies.
Well, I was reading a little bit of the background on this one, and it is sort of a, it might have been a favor for a friend because they were kind of doing it back to back while they were doing another movie.
Yeah.
There was an overlap.
That was Hell Up in Harlem from 1973, and this movie was filmed simultaneously. So the Hell Up in Harlem was being filmed on the weekends when they weren't shooting It's Alive. So it shares a lot of the same crew and talent that were involved. So many of the crew and talent were working 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm. That's a hard schedule.
That is a really rough schedule, especially the long shoot days that film actually has. You know, if you get off with a 12-hour day, that's a short day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. This movie stars John P. Ryan as Frank, who stretches back to episode 2 of Invasion of the Remake when we talked about
Best of the Best.
Oh, can't even remember that far back.
I wasn't here, but
yeah, that was prior to Sam's tenure, yes.
Yeah.
By a good 30, 40 episodes.
Yeah.
Sharon Farrell was Lenore, and we talked about her in episode 227.
She was in Night of the Comet.
Correct. Andrew Duggan was the professor. He was in Like Flint. Guy Stockwell was Bob Clayton.
Any relation to Dean Stockwell?
His older brother.
Ah, there we go. Because I could see a bit of Dean in that person.
Oh, there you go. I tried to find out, but I didn't find it. So good for you. James Dixon was Lieutenant Perkins, and he was in episode 6, The Stuff, and episode 196, Q, and pretty much a whole lot of other Larry Cohen movies. They kind of went hand in hand. Michael Ansara was the captain, and modern audiences will probably recognize that voice as Mr. Freeze from Batman, the animated series. Those are the best episodes, the Mr. Freeze episodes.
Nice.
Yeah. He also played Klingon in the original Star Trek that did wind up reoccurring later in Star Trek The Next Generation. Kang? Huh. Yep. Kang. I want to say it was Kang.
Are you thinking The Simpsons?
Nope, I'm not.
Kang and Kodos?
Nope. But maybe that's where they got it from The Simpsons probably got it from original Star Trek. I don't know for sure. I could even be wrong on the Klingon, but I think I'm pretty close. And I'm sure the Trekkies are just going crazy right now. But if I got it right, you can't say anything. Robert Emhard was the executive, and we may have talked about him in episode 116.
310 to Yuma.
That's right. William Jr. was Charlie. And he was in, a good pedigree movie, MacArthur.
Nice.
Yeah. Seamus Locke was the doctor, and we've never talked about him, but he was in a movie called You Can't Fool an Irishman. I just really like the title.
Me too.
And Chris was played by Daniel Holzman. And that's the primary cast. Okay, so let's get into It's Alive, the original here. Now, I did like this one a lot better than the remake for a lot of obvious reasons that we touched at the beginning of the program here. But for the most part, it plays out like a 50s monster movie. The kid's born, runs a rampage trying to get back home. But there's at least some underlying subtext. I mean, we did touch upon that it was a commentary on those chemicals and prescription drugs of the 50s and 60s that were used on pregnant women and the fears of parenthood. And some of it, I think, was handled fairly well. There were times where I'm like, man, I don't know about this Frank guy. He almost felt like a gangster to me.
Yeah.
Maybe why the actor played a lot of gangsters. But yeah, he didn't seem like the most likable of dudes. And he'd be like supportive with his wife and stuff. And then when he wasn't around his wife and talking to cops and doctors and stuff, it was like, kill the fucker. Kill the little shit. And he's pissed off about being outed on the news about it and how that's going to affect his career and his life. He's very selfish.
He works in PR.
So, I mean, goes without saying, that kind of goes with the territory, I suppose. You're always thinking about others and furthering their careers, including your own. But it actually winds up playing nicely in the long game because he's so avoiding the responsibility with this when it's finally confronted. And he's like, there's an underlying hate for what has been birthed here. And when he has the chance to kill it, he doesn't. That maternal instinct actually does kick in.
Well, there's a very good sound design at the moment when it kind of hits him, because like you can hear the thing kind of like, and then there's the that like babies do when they're trying to get a breath while crying.
Yeah. And it moves from that animal sound to the crying of an actual baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I thought that sound design was well made. Yeah, absolutely. That really stood out.
Because you can just see the moment, like just that click of a moment where he's like going, this is my baby.
That was probably my favorite moment in the whole film, because it's a bit of a slog, because it is hard to enjoy a movie where your central character is so unlikable.
Yep.
And you know, I mean, you don't like him from the beginning. That first 13 minutes was way, way longer than it needed to be. And it just established that he's really, I mean, it does say that it's sure that he's selfish.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's why it was so long, just to establish what a dick he is. But I just didn't enjoy that first 13 minutes. But once I got past that, it became quite interesting.
He kind of acts like more superior to some of the other expected fathers in the room. And you really don't dig the guy when he's away from his wife. He puts on airs around his wife.
Well, even when he's with her, to a certain extent, he's still pretty unlikable. He's very much a throwback to that 50s sort of I'm the man, so it's my household kind of character.
Yeah, just right? A lot of that garbage. But yeah, when you talk about the throwback stuff, I want to talk about the birthing scene, because that was very indicative where, I mean, she's going through pain. There's something wrong. She's trying to tell the doctor and like, no, I know whatever's happening. Everything's fine. When that doctor died, I wasn't sorry, because it's really frustrating when something's wrong. Like women have said, like during birth, something's wrong, and they proceed to almost bleed out. So we know when something's wrong. So maybe just don't discard that. And he's sitting there on the bottom where it's like, it's a big baby, and he's cutting her from hole to hole just casually. I mean, fuck, dude. Just better bedside manner. So, yeah, when he died, I wasn't that sorry, but the poor woman, she's strapped to her bed. That was the other part that freaked me out.
Yeah.
They have her strapped.
I hadn't actually noticed that, and I assume that's for safety for her and some of the medics in the room during birth, because it is so painful. But I didn't really notice she was strapped down until we come back and everybody's dead and she's kind of on the table.
Yep.
And I could see her strapped down. I'm like, oh God. I felt more bad for her being alive and strapped down in this carnal house.
Charnel. But yeah, she's strapped down, probably still bleeding. I mean, hasn't been sewn up. It's very upsetting on so many levels.
Oh, and the way it's like discovered, it's so casually too. Somebody in another room just dropping off supplies, an orderly, and he comes out and his boots are sticky. I'm like, now that's effective. Because you don't notice it was a dark room and comes out like, oh my God.
Oh no, that's the remake.
Is it? Actually, they did pretty good.
Orderly. Yeah, in the original, it's an orderly who comes out with like a bite on him and just collapses.
Oh, yeah.
Then the father starts running.
Well, hey, look at that. We zeroed in on something that did good well in the
remake. And it was like, Yeah, and then he tries to, like, he runs into the thing. It's so funny because they're like, oh, we got to pull him out of this room. I'm like going, yeah, you can, but maybe, I don't know, deal with the shit that's going on in there. It's kind of like they're leaving her for dead.
I remember seeing the remake initially, and it's boring. So none of it stuck in my brain. But there was one thing I remember, like, the one thing that does stick in my brain was in the operating table and cutting that cord. For some reason, I got in the back of my mind, like, some toxin poured out of it and killed everybody in the room. I don't know why. Yeah. And it's always been stuck in my head years later. I'm like, that's a cool idea.
I wonder.
But having watched both of these now, I also wonder, like, she's basically given birth to a perfect predator. Like, to be this dangerous as an infant, what would that thing be like fully grown?
Right? I mean, we're getting into territories where you have, like, the Omen, where it's a child of pure evil. And, like, what do you do as a parent?
And I think that's a struggle. That's an interesting commentary in the original, too. Is it evil or is it instinct? I'm inclined to believe this was purely instinctual on the baby's part.
Yeah. I'd agree with that, too. Like, this feels more like animal instinct more than anything else. And is it capable of learning past its primal instincts? Now, we don't know. Maybe it was evil, but we'll never know. But it didn't really seem like its actions. It was the actions. It felt like more of a predator and also protecting its own family, but it didn't feel like anything was going out of its way to be malicious. Now, it could be, because, I mean, this movie was certainly inspired by The Exorcist, Rosemary's Baby, and apparently a little short story that, Sam, you may have read from Ray Bradbury, The Little Assassin. Does that ring a bell?
No, I haven't read as much Bradbury as I should have, to be honest with you. I've found him a little bit dry for my liking, unfortunately.
That sounds intriguing, though.
Yeah, it does.
But you know what? It's kind of weird. Like, when I'm looking at this, it is instinct. But what's interesting about it is, to me, it seems actually quite instinctual for a baby. I mean, they sleep, poop, want food. That's it. So the baby is going out to eat. I'm hungry, must eat. So it is a predator, but it's kind of doing it as a baby.
Yeah. And usually, like, even in predatory species, I mean, they can't even do that until a little more down the road when they're walking. And even then, it's usually kind of in games with other cubs, like lions and stuff, where it's kind of training them to pounce on prey and things like that, and maybe small birds or whatever until they get bigger. But this thing's, like, vicious out of the gate to take down full-grown human beings and multiple human beings in a room. It moves super fast.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see what it looked like as an adult.
With a lot of mammals, is they're born somewhat underdeveloped in order to get them out, and then they finish their growing outside of the womb while they're getting nourishment. And that's sort of why this is so terrifying to get. Like, I mean, prey, like giraffes, can walk pretty quickly after they're born, but predators need a lot more time.
Yeah.
That part of what you're saying there, Jay, about what the child could have been if it had been given a chance to grow up, that just makes this ending a lot more tragic, because you have Frank's sort of realization, well, this is my child and I don't want it to die. The single-mindedness of it is, well, this thing's an animal and it's a killer. It has to die, when they've kind of ignored the fact that maybe this child could be taught to not kill.
Yeah. You don't develop those concepts until you're much older than a baby. Like, right and wrong, you're just pure it at that point.
Yeah.
So who knows what the baby could have grown into.
And it could have been for a really interesting sequel instead of what we got.
Yeah.
I will admit, his last choice of throwing the baby at the guy who had pissed a lot of people off and he just gets shot along with the baby. Cool move, bro.
Yeah. Now, this movie was fairly successful. Low budget of only $500,000, and went on to do, after a problematic release, went on to make a little over $7 million. So pretty successful for such a small budget, but it took a while to get going because he made the movie with the studio backing, and then all the executives changed by the time he finished the film, who weren't interested and didn't push it, gave it a limited release in 1974 in Chicago, and not much happened with it. And then another Warner Brothers shakeup, and oh, they got behind it again in 77. So it got a much wider release in 77. So it took a long time to make its money back, but did okay. Spawned two more sequels and of course the remake. Now, from my understanding, I haven't watched the sequels. I might do it after the podcast, but my understanding is the second film, it's like Alien. You get one alien in this, in the second film, you get a bunch of them. So we get a bunch of mutant babies. And by the third film, they've gathered them all up and kind of imprisoned them in their own little island. And the man responsible for these drugs that have caused these abnormal births tries to free them from the island.
Okay.
And that's what I know. I'm kind of interested to see where it goes, to be honest. So I might, I don't know if I'll watch them right away or cover them for 31 Days of Horror.
Well, you know how we were just discussing what happens if they are allowed to grow.
Yeah.
Maybe those questions are answered a little bit.
Well, I feel like maybe that's what they should have done instead of a remake is like, okay, one lives or multiple of them lives 20 years later. What's this going to look like?
Oh, you know what would have been good is if it's like one lives 20 years later, but it's the mom. The mom was the evil baby. And it just looks normal and then gives birth to a demon baby again.
See, that. So, yeah.
Yeah. So none of the killing phases her. So that would be part of why, well, okay, this is just, oh, kids. And that's why he would cover up all the murders.
I feel like this would all parents go, ah, kids.
Yeah.
Right? little babies, don't do that.
Get that out of your mouth. They say that all the time. It's usually Lego or a brick or something, not usually the neighbor's cat.
Yeah. What's the saying? It's like nothing moves faster than a toddler with something in their mouth. It's a finger. See, that would be a good movie. Because she's trying to keep the family together. She's trying to hide this from her husband. She's trying to protect her baby. She knows what's going on. It just makes a lot more sense.
It does. It would give everything that happened and what we got context.
Yeah.
See, we just remade it for you, Hollywood. Properly.
Mm-hmm. It took Trish all of 30 seconds.
Right? Which is already more thought than they gave the remake.
Yeah.
It is a fairly simple 91-minute movie that Larry Cohen has done here. He's always been one of the more successful low-budget schlockmeisters out there. I mean, we love hitting some of his movies with the stuff and cue. But for not having a lot of depth, he does manage to hit some of those notes along the way, which, again, I don't think the... that remake, I feel like they didn't even understand the material.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get why they would want to make the change of having the baby with the family more, moving away from the mutant baby, at least the look of the baby, to make it more normal. There are things I kind of understood. I mean, that major change was sticking with the family, but if there's no Chase, then what are you going to do for the next hour?
Well, I think
that was the problem they had.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why they substituted in the covering up murders, because that's sort of what's left. And you didn't get the unraveling of her. Again, it doesn't make as much sense. And if we could have dug into that, that would have been good. Because, I mean, her friend, they're talking to each other and she knows, like, they tried to terminate pregnancy, like, together. But I mean, if I had a friend who all of a sudden gave up on everything after having a baby and she seems visibly unhinged. I'm going to be very worried about this woman. Like, it could be postpartum. She could be having a break of some kind. I mean, yeah, you're going to be worried about your friend. Mm-hmm. I know you just had a baby, but something is very wrong here.
Yeah, friend Marnie, like, they use her, they set her up in the beginning. You think she's going to be a major player, and we keep flashing back to her, making the phone calls, and they do set all that up where she's concerned and then finally goes to check. And then it's such a quick scene of the mom covering up what the baby's done. Oh, I'm fine. Don't worry about it. And they argue and they split off very mad at each other. And then she's quickly dispatched after we find the body of her boyfriend. And then she's gone. I'm like, well, damn. I thought she was the only one in this movie who could act.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I think in the kid, like, again, discarded, there could have been a lot more. Like, I was kept waiting for something to happen. Like, especially when he meets that new girl at school, I thought there was going to be like, oh, it's two kids solving the mystery. I was really hoping we could go there. But no, we didn't do that either.
No, that scene was there only to do one thing. It was there to address the media storyline through the original.
Yeah.
So there's one line. Oh, you're famous. You're the one whose nephew was born during the murders. And that's it.
Yep.
And that was like his only purpose. And to hint at the fact he might be in jeopardy, but he never is. At no point is he ever in jeopardy.
Nope.
Super frustrating. All right. Well, let's move on to the trailer for It's Alive 2009. And we'll be right back to eviscerate this fucking movie.
Lenore, the anesthesiologist, is going to prep you now.
What's wrong with the baby?
There's nothing wrong with the baby, Lenore.
What's wrong with the baby?
Daniel.
Lenore! Lenore!
Where's Daniel?
I just can't get him to sleep. He just gets so hungry.
When the baby sleeps.
Where's the baby?
Be quiet.
Police!
Dead, Frank.
No, it's alive.
Mommy's back.
That was the short trailer for It's Alive from 2009, a direct-to-video film that was budgeted at $10 million and grossed. Anybody want to take a guess what this grossed?
$0?
No, some.
$6?
$120,000.
Wow, you guys really thought this sucked and did badly. No, it made $1 million and change, but that's not much. That's 10%.
Yeah, okay. I know, the lead-in made me think I had to guess really low.
I apparently misjudged how badly you thought this movie was going to do. Well, I know Sam was being facetious at $6. Like, if the one person went to see this, even in a short run, or even a rental probably cost more than $6.
There have been movies that only made under $10 in theatrical release. There's a couple of them.
Yeah. Some. It's quite interesting to watch where there's ones like, yeah, they had limited release and like two people bought tickets. Literally two people.
And there were probably mom and dad. Actually, I'm gonna do the stats right now. Actually, the original film, IMDb gives a 5.8 out of 10. IMDb not so kind on the remake at 3.5, but the real numbers are really fun with Rotten Tomatoes. The original one, take a stab at what the critics.
Oh, critics.
Yeah. We'll do the critics and then we'll do fans.
Ooh, 42.
Okay, Sam?
I think you're being generous. I'm thinking it's around 28.
For the original? We're doing the original. We're doing the original.
Original, sorry, my bad. I'd say they like this one okay. I'd say about 56, 57%.
Critics were actually higher than that at 73%.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, actually pretty decent critic score for what I think is a middling movie. I mean, it's silly, but it is fun. Audience score, though, go ahead and give me your thoughts on that.
78.
Sam?
I think the audience is a little less kind. I'm going to go with 63.
Well, Sam is right. It is a little less kind, but a lot less kind than that. 40%. Of audience.
Damn it. I should have reversed my two guesses.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know. I'm starting to think audiences feel the same way about this baby horror subgenre that I do. I don't particularly like them, but this gets really fun here. Rotten Tomatoes. The critic score is nil. There wasn't enough to make a score. So we're going to skip to audience score. Take a while.
Oh, for the remake?
For the remake now. Yeah. We're just doing audience here because there wasn't enough for a critic score.
37?
37% for Trish.
Oh, I think you're being generous, Trish. I still think you're being generous. I'm going to go with 17.
Yeah, both are over 6%.
Oh, I should have gone with my first guess.
Wow.
I was going to say 7%.
You should have.
You used the 6 on dollars instead of percent.
Yes. I was about to say.
Yeah, so I was on the right wavelength, just not quite on the same track.
Yeah.
You didn't have the correct unit.
That's right. I don't know if we've actually covered a movie that had an audience score this low before.
I don't think so either.
Okay, well, this obviously is based on the screenplay by Larry Cohen and written by Paul Sapossi and James Portales, directed by Joseph Rusnik, who did such Wesley Snipe hits as Art of War 2 and The Contractor. I didn't even know there was a sequel to Art of War, let alone a movie called The Contractor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it like the, you know what? I just want to see like just a set of movies that come out just with like names, The Contractor, The Mechanic, The Equalizer, like just stuff.
We've had all of those movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, she just wants the box set.
Yeah.
The box set of all things, the hammer, the Hebrew hammer, and we'll call it the toolbox. And it's just all these things.
I like it. This movie stars Bijou Phillips as Lenore, and was in Almost Famous, and the remake of Wizard of Gore. Bet you're really looking forward to that after this one. Nothing?
It can't be worse.
I actually have seen the remake. It's not worse. But I have never seen the original for Wizard of Gore, so I'm not sure what I'm comparing it to yet. One day we'll do it. James Murray was Frank, and he was fairly recently in the Netflix action movie Six Underground.
Which was quite good.
I haven't seen it yet.
It was fun. I mean, I shouldn't say good, but it was a lot of fun.
It was Michael Bay... lots of things flipping and exploding, and yeah, but that was about all it was going for it. Good action, really good action.
Yes.
Raphael Coleman was Chris Davis, and he actually was in Nanny McPhee and The Fourth Kind. Owen Teal was Sergeant Perkins, probably best known to our audience as Alistair Thorne in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
And you can also catch him in A Discovery of Witches over on Shudder.
And a weird little show called Stella that takes place in Wales, where I was like, oh, I know that guy. So he was definitely overdubbed, and I'm not sure if it was his voice.
I felt that about almost everybody in this movie at times. I like Sam's comments about Bijou Phillips sounding like Minnie Mouse. I honestly didn't know what was going on there, and I couldn't find a confirmation, but I'm almost positive this was 100% ADR. Ty Glasser was Marnie, and she was in a movie, I don't know what it is, but I just like the name of it, Hard Boiled Sweets.
Ooh.
Sounds yummy.
Yeah, she's obviously an English actress.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see more of her because you're right. I think she's the only one in the whole movie who was actually trying to give us a performance.
Yeah.
Yes.
I actually thought she was pretty good. Oliver Coopersmith was Mike, and you can catch him in Tin Star. I'm not even sure how to pronounce this one. Ione Karamofilov? Karamofilov. Sure. He played Adam, and we may have mentioned him in episode 40, or I might have just skipped over his name because it's really hard to say. What was episode 40?
He was definitely in Conan the Barbarian.
Yes, he was.
The remake.
Yes, the remake.
Ooh, that's a bad sign.
I know. Ian. Yeah.
He's a remake guy. Oh, yeah. No.
Jack Ellis was Professor Baldwin and probably most famous for being on Coronation Street. Skye Bennett was Nicole. And Trish, you might have recognized her from Dark Floors, that Lordy movie. And you watched it for 31 Days of Horror.
Oh, wow. I did not. Bad me.
That's okay. I don't even know who she was in this movie.
Gotta rewatch
that. She didn't get a lot of screen time, I'm guessing. Arkie Reiss was Perry, and he was in Dracula Untold. And Todd Jensen was Dr. Orbison, and he was in Wrong Turn 3. And I know I wouldn't mention it, but he was also in The Mangler, which I talked about in the Stephen King episode that we did, which was episode 243.
An enjoyable movie, FYI. Enjoyed it.
The Mangler?
Yeah.
Are you sure we're talking about the same movie, Trish?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible, but I loved it. I don't know why.
I guess, you know, homicidal babies versus homicidal clothing presses. Yeah.
Yep.
it's not that much more of a stretch, I suppose, after watching this.
Right? Every once in a while, you want something that's just silly as hell.
That it was. That it was. Yeah, you can definitely hear my thoughts on the Mangler and Sam's thoughts in 243. Whew. Especially when it gets up and chases people.
Yeah, you know, it was okay until then.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, the baby almost seems plausible by comparison.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%, for sure. The evolution of new killer babies. Well, you know, thinking about this too, having a baby that kills might also kind of tap into that whole deep instinct is like, children are just there to replace you. You're going to die. They are replacing you. So like having them like come alive and like destroy everything in their way is sort of a parental fear, I would say.
Wow. We're digging deep. Should we lay on the couch here? That was very pessimistic, but at the same time, really right.
Yeah.
you may have dug into traumas I didn't know I had.
Oops. <Yeah.
laughs> See, that would have, again, things that would have made this remake a lot more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly they don't address that. They don't even suggest that, but it's an interesting theory. And yeah, very deep.
I think this movie probably would have been better if it was just filmed in front of a live studio audience. No script, just, all right, you, we're going to be in a hospital. We're going to have a demon baby, throw ideas out. We're going to do them.
For sure.
Loose Moose.
Yes, the Loose Moose doing improv. Okay, Loose Moose, listen up. We're doing an improv. It's alive.
Yes, it's a live improv show now off Broadway. I love it.
Oh, and when you throw the baby, like the baby will go into the audience and you throw the baby and that audience member is just dead. Like you just have to pretend to be dead. The baby kills part of the audience.
Ooh. Yeah, it would be a fun stage show because it's not a fun remake. Although I got to give the special effects guys credit for the fact that we don't see the baby very much is one thing, but the gore left behind.
Yeah.
Juicy. Like, really juicy.
Yeah, really juicy.
Really juicy.
Juicy and drippy.
There was one moment I really kind of enjoyed where, like, you don't see the baby, but you kind of get a scale for size. It's when they're in the basement. He's there with the sergeant and Frank and the baby's, like, on that little ledge above the sergeant. And you're, like, going, ah, like, it's scary. But you're, like, this thing's just going to jump down and attack him. But you kind of just see the outline of the baby.
Yeah, that's something we don't get a lot of is scale in the original because Rick Baker, he's using pretty much an adult cast mold for the creature shots that are done very sporadically and done in dark corners and stuff. So you don't get an idea of scale unless somebody's like holding it or whatever. And it's usually well covered up so you can't see anything.
Mm-hmm. But it's the Jaws effect. Your brain fills it in a lot better than anybody's over the top visual probably could.
Well, I think that's what the remake director obviously realized that was functionally something that worked in the original and he kept intact. And let's face it, you let the audience do the work, it brings your budget way down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm glad that Trish brought up that basement scene though, because we talked about that last night, Jay, where Frank finds the body parts just as the sergeant walks in.
Yeah.
Yep.
That wasn't bad, actually, finding his, like, I don't know, the larder? Or maybe this is just where he threw, like, where spiders will sometimes have a little section where they throw the rest of the bodies or whatever.
But, well, I think that was Lenore who was hiding the bodies.
Yeah.
She was covering up the killings. But, I mean, I like they undid something that was really great there, though, because I think the idea of that sort of misconception that Frank was killing all these people was really a neat misdirect. But his line, that southern drawl, come on, boy, keep calm, boy. And it's like, okay, you know his name.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
At no point on set or in editing did somebody go, oh, fuck, that's awful. We got to fix that.
Yeah.
Right.
It was awful.
And if we would have led with the sergeant having suspicions about one of them, that might have been something better developed. So when we get that end game and he catches them in the basement covered in blood, that would have paid off better.
Yeah.
And it would have been really good too, even if he kind of suspected her as well. Like, I need you to talk to the psychiatrist because he'll help you remember stuff. Yeah, that's it. He'll help you remember stuff rather than dig into your brain.
Yeah. Well,
and find out if you're crazy.
I mean, don't you suspect the only person alive left in a room full of dead people? Like, that's just sort of.
Yeah.
prime suspect right there.
Yeah.
Number one person of interest.
Do they have videotapes in operating rooms? Do they tape those things?
No, I don't think so, because there's a lot going on. And plus, I mean, unless
you're
doing,
you don't
like
want a camera staring up your shoot.
No, unless you're doing like a TLC special. And besides, it wouldn't be upper shoot, because here's the other part that's like, they didn't really dig into it. It's horror on its own, but it's real horror. That like, when you get a C-section, part of it is like, you're basically disassembled. They'll cut open your abdomen, remove a bunch of your intestines out of the way, and then uterus, and then take the baby out. A bunch of you is outside of you at the time you're getting a C-section.
Yeah, and they do cameras in operating theaters, but usually for like instructional purposes.
Yeah. Right?
Like which this definitely wasn't.
Yeah, and they usually have the permission of the patient as well, saying, right. Would you be all right with us using you for instructional, yeah. or this procedure for instructional purposes?
Oh, wouldn't have that been cool if it was an operating theater and students were up above watching it? So now all of them are dead too?
Yes.
Oh, that would have been cool. But at the same time, then they would have had a recording of what would happen. And but that would actually have been all right, because right away in the original film, they suspected the baby. There's evidence of something of certain size and like actual investigations going on. Why was the 70s investigation better than the 2000s one?
What was hilarious is you have the one officer in the original is like going, you know, investigating killer babies, this is something I usually do a lot of.
That was a great line, and you can catch that at the end of the episode. It made the whole movie for me.
Yes.
That was fantastic. You know, I'm not really good at this whole investigating babies thing.
Yeah. Because what are you going to do? Is like, usually I know what a suspect wants, but as a baby, what do I do?
As funny as that was, it also sets up the end really well.
Yeah.
It ends on him saying, well, there's another one in Seattle. Well, now I'm the expert.
Yep.
Unless you bring Frank along with you. But yeah, there weren't a whole lot of survivors left out of that one. Mm. What do you think about that ending? Like the original ends in the sewer chase. Frank brings it out. And then eventually the thing gets gunned down. But the mom picks up the baby and walks back into a burning house at the end of the movie, which I think was supposed to be artistic, and mom going, well, I'm going to be maternal right up to the end, but you cannot exist in this world. And
right.
And I think part of it was suicide as well. I have supported you throughout this, but I'm a monster as much as you are.
Yeah. Well, and she also probably thinks, well, I gave birth to a monster. I myself am a monster. I probably created you. So I got to go too.
Well, she does make that connection between that abortion
pill
solution that she attempted and the fact that that's probably what caused the strange mutation in her child. But again, very throwaway. And they're trying to tell you, or sort of set it up so you kind of think that she's ready to tell Frank that there's something wrong with the baby. But instead, there's this other confession that's telling you sort of why. And again, that's a nod back to the original film. But again, doesn't have the same effectiveness, I don't think.
Yeah. Could have been the talk about how if she'd been able to get a proper and serviceable abortion, this would never have happened.
I mean, and let's face it, you're college level students. You're supposed to be really smart. You should know better than ordering drugs off the internet.
Right?
Yeah, especially drugs that are like designed to abort a child. What's that doing to you? And it does poison her. She even admits that it poisoned her. She was vomiting and throwing up. So yeah, it is a poison, pure and simple.
I mean, the right ones, that wouldn't happen. That's the whole point. It's very disturbing where it's like, you know, putting people without a choice, this is what happens. Maybe just that's a problem.
And again, if they'd have leaned more into something like that to give the film some substance,
yeah,
it would have been a more interesting film.
For sure.
They kind of focused on the very well done gory scenes. They didn't do a very good job of creating the tension leading up to them. And they didn't do a very good job of developing the characters that would have helped create the tension leading up to the gore scenes. There's just a clumsiness about this filmmaking that's just a really frustrating watch.
Yeah, it's like they had, here's an idea, let's put it in here. And it was genuinely a good idea, but let's not do anything to lead up to it, to develop it, to explore it, and to make it pay off. And everything gets wasted because of it. It's so frustrating to watch. Like, why is there a little brother that's crippled? If you're not going to put him in jeopardy or anything, he's just kind of there. There are times where you're thinking, oh, baby might want to nibble on his toes or something, but nope, nothing.
Right?
Yeah, the only time where I really enjoyed his presence on the screen, well, not his presence, because he was actually one of the better actors in the film as well, but the scene where he's on the bed and the cat's playing with the dead mouse, that was a really, really good setup. And then nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, it could have been, even if they didn't want to have it where he's in danger from the baby, even if they didn't want to put him in danger, it could be part of it where he wants to be protective of his nephew. He, too, is struggling with the fact that he loves a monster.
They did one other good thing with Brian in the remake there where he talks about how he's afraid of his nephew.
Yeah, right? And that's it.
And that's it. But again, it's throwaway. There's so much where they're like, okay, we know we want to talk about this, but it's just going to be one line and then we're never going to go back to it.
Yeah. Well, and they do allude to the point where he's like, I don't need a babysitter. And it could have been interesting where it'd be like, we're going to leave you with the baby. You're the babysitter. And then they do not.
Well, and they couldn't because they'd already established that Lenore was not leaving the child, right?
True.
She does not want to leave that child alone at any point because she knows in the back of her mind that there's something wrong with her baby.
Oh, sure. And then, she inherently knows that you get a babysitter, that's just dinner for the baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, if they left it with the uncle, I don't know. Maybe baby doesn't want to nibble on uncle. We don't know.
Well, we do know there's some sort of familial instinct where it doesn't feed on family. It did take a bite out of Frank in the remake.
But not to kill him.
No, it was because trapped him in this big tin can thing. So it was a little pissed off about being in there. And it was it got a little toothy on the way out, but it didn't kill him.
Nope. I mean, and it bit Lenore. I mean, it was because it didn't know how to use its teeth yet because it bit her while it was breastfeeding. But there's no deliberate harm.
No deliberate malice. But if you want nightmare fuel, babies with teeth is a thing that happens very rarely.
There was actually something that actually disturbed me a little bit because they get it home. It's like, the baby turned over. They're not supposed to do that for 4 months. And like, it turned himself over in the crib. And I did that. Long before I was supposed to. I remember my mom telling me I had done that in the crib. You turned over. And Jesus, within my first year, I was escaping the crib. So
nice.
Yeah.
Oh, escaping to do what?
I don't know. It's all been blocked out. But if anybody knows about a string of bizarre murders in the Alberta area in the 70s, it wasn't me. I'm sure. Hey,
were you the inspiration for this film, maybe?
I don't know. I'm starting to wonder. I mean, the original film was 1974, so I would have been a year old. It's entirely possible.
There's something your mother isn't telling you, Jay.
Yeah, I have questions. I definitely have questions.
Yeah, absolutely. After watching this movie, you should have many questions.
I am a twin as well.
Ooh. I wonder if you were supposed to be a triplet and you and your brother just ate the other one in the womb.
Or all the good stuff went into one and all the bad stuff went into the other one. Oh.
Like a Danny DeVito, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
This is that Simpsons episode. Like, oh, Bart was the evil one the whole time.
Yep. That's one of my favorite episodes.
Maybe I need the bucket of fish heads. I don't know.
Hey, you're both out now. What's done is done.
Yeah, that's true. Fish heads, yummy, yummy fish heads.
Fish heads, eat them up, yum.
Terrified, Sam?
A little bit.
If you get that, you're at a very specific age.
Oh, I get the song. I know the song. I promised I wouldn't sing on the podcast anymore.
Oh, just saying that to our listeners. If you get that, you know what age you are. You get it.
Sam, you could break the singing promise if you want.
I'm not singing fish head. Sorry. No.
Well, we didn't even do it properly. We actually have to do it more in a Bijou Phillips where they amped her up, boys.
Yes. Well, I need special effects to do that. No. All right, Smeagol.
And
well,
Smeagol
does eat fish.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't like it cooked.
That's true. And I could hear him in my head doing that song.
Nice. I did it.
Is there anything good you could pick out for this, of this remake? Like, if you're a fan of the original, I would say never, ever watch the remake. If you're at least curious, watch it first before you watch the original.
The house they live in is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to say that.
Sam sent a text to me about that. He's like, the only good thing about this movie is the location.
Yeah. Right? And we talked about, too, about there's some – you can tell that the director has a good eye. There's some really great shots in this remake.
I'll give one scene.
There's one nod where there's a pan across a room, and in the background is the carriage from the poster for the original movie. And I like that. That was a smart little nod back to it, and it made sense in context with the film because they do have a baby, blah, blah, blah. But aside from that, not much.
Well, Marnie comes in and she goes and finds that little carriage and she opens it up and there's a bear in there rather than the baby. And that was a bit of a misdirect. There's one shot that I really did enjoy is it's in conjunction where Frank is taking the can with the baby in it and he's dragging it from left to right. And then they show it and then they cut back and it's Lenore walking in the basement from left to right. It kind of goes back and forth between them walking forward. And I kind of liked how they put that together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he actually had a pretty decent visual sense. And unfortunately, as a storyteller, not so great. I mean, I'm not sure how much you can lay on the scriptwriters on this, but not a great effort overall. I have a quote from Larry Cohen. It's a terrible picture. It's just beyond awful. And I would advise anybody who likes my film to cross the street and avoid seeing the new enchilada.
Ooh, that's pretty clear.
And accurate as all hell.
Yeah,
a very brutal description of this movie.
Yeah, I think I still didn't mind it, but I think it was because of several actors that I just enjoyed watching and the set. But that's about it. Oh, I had a question, though, because I obviously missed it and I tried seeing what was going on. What started the fire at the end?
I missed it, too.
That's 3 for 3 because, I don't know, by the time shit started happening, I was really tuned out. I started making dinner.
Oh, okay.
I just didn't care anymore. But the fact that all three of us missed what started that fire, like, I didn't even know there was a fire until she walked back into it. I'm like, what the fuck? Where did that happen?
Yeah.
Maybe they sparked it when they're dragging the tin can.
Well, I didn't know if the sergeant was dead, and then I think all of a sudden he was dead, and then
I saw the cop's death. Like, I saw his partner's death, but I don't remember seeing his.
Well, the baby, because the baby jumps down and bites him, but then he shoots, and the baby goes away, and then we never see him again, and then there's a fire.
So I guess we're just assumed that died off camera.
I guess this feels very dreamlike when we're trying to explain it. And then there was this thing that happened and we don't know why, but this is what happened.
Yeah.
I wonder how much it was edited out because it does feel like there's a lot of really choppy cuts and there's one really, really awkward fade. And I'm like, I wonder, like, you just kind of wonder how much did they cut out to bring it down to 120?
Yeah.
And left like all the context on the cutting room floor for some reason.
I guess maybe they probably got a note. They're like, make it gorier. And that was it. And at the expense of story, you got more gore.
Well, I mean, both are pretty mean-spirited, nasty little films. We've certainly seen gorier. But I mean, if you like gore, if you're willing to sit through 60 minutes of gore, there will be gore at the end of the remake. I love how that sentence came together.
But it's like good gore, not bore gore.
Yeah.
Like, oh God, that's what we should call movies that are really boring. It was just a whole bunch of bore gore.
Yeah. Yeah, by the time you got there, it just wasn't enough to wake you up.
Yep. The other one is a slog for parts of it. But once you get to like some of those ending arcs, you're like, okay, now I get it.
Yeah, Sam texted me and he didn't have a good time in those first 11 minutes.
No. I think I didn't start getting engaged with it till about the time where the milkman gets killed.
Yes.
And then I'm like, that's about where the turning point of the film for me, where it went from being, okay, this is work, to, okay, it's kind of interesting now. And then that third act, I actually really quite enjoyed that because of the way it developed Frank's turn. So I did like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's still not a great movie. I'm more on the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes than I am the critic score.
Yeah, I agree that neither one of them are particularly good, but at least the original's watchable. I didn't have near the same problem with that first 11 minutes or so, but yeah, you could tell that the waiting room was just needless padding just to round it out to get to a theatrical 90-minute plus length. Otherwise, it would have been about 80 minutes as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the waiting room actually was the only important part of that 13 minutes, because that's where you get the analogy of the roaches evolving instead of dying due to the new poison. So, so it did serve a purpose. I think my problem with that first 13 minutes was how long it took and how nonchalant they were about everything. I know, it's your second child, and they get up and they're bantering and he's goofing around with his kid. It's like, well, no, you're having a fucking baby.
Yeah.
Get in the car and go. I don't need 7 minutes dialogue.
Right.
That doesn't really serve the story. I mean, I guess you're trying to establish a relationship between the son and his father and Frank and Lenore.
Yeah,
and
I thought they were pretty fucking slow. And, you know, baby's kicking. I'm like, oh, so you're going to go pick out your clothes while she gets ready and adds a shower.
Didn't you have a shower?
She had a shower.
Yeah. From what I understand, and this is only stories I've heard from other women, is that, like, labor will start a long time prior and it'll be like, maybe like 20 minutes. You shouldn't go until the contractions are like really close together, but like it'll be hours and hours of random bits of pain before you even have to go.
Yeah. And that's fine. And it's true. And I do know that as well. And I just don't think that
they didn't show that well.
No. And it didn't serve the story anyhow.
No.
Right. Right. And I think that's the issue is a lot of what happened in that first 11 minutes didn't really serve the story. They could have tightened up to five and still had sort of that show all the connections between the family. And I'm assuming it was an uncle that Brian was staying with. But yeah, shorten it up, make it a little less boring. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I got past it once things started happening.
What was up with that poor guy that couldn't possibly use a vending machine? He just kept losing his money everywhere.
Oh, that was actually kind of funny. I wish. I mean, it was obviously an attempt at humor and it worked. I actually found it.
Yeah,
what is his life?
Just a tension breaker, but I love that Frank just, like, he's getting pissed off. Frank just hands him 50 cents, and it's like, don't worry, here's 50 cents. And then he goes loses it in a different machine.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that was funny, even though, again, it just established how much of a dick Frank is, because his whole approach to it is, yeah, you know what? It happens. Here's 50 cents and try again or whatever. But he just came across as a dick even in that bit of dialogue. Mm.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Maybe it's that actor's incapable of being anything but smarmy.
Maybe.
Maybe. And, well, I don't know about you guys, but I found some of it. I was going up and down on the volume a lot because I found out a lot with his dialogue. I'm like, he seems to be mumbling a lot. So I had trouble. So I would like put it up so I could hear Frank and then put it back down for the music stings and the sirens.
No, I didn't have as much of a problem, but I probably have a little bit more balanced system than you do.
I mean, a great system.
The way he's definitely mumbly when he talks, but yeah, I didn't have a problem with it.
Okay.
All right.
I thought it was a character choice because I was like, is that what he's just doing? I don't know. As a PR person, he should speak better.
Well, demon babies aside, we made it through a weird subgenre in the horror world. I'm kind of glad we did this. We haven't done it a horror in a while. If you want to see us do more horror movies, 70s, 80s horror movies that you think are worthy of a remake, please let us know on our social media, at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com, where we'll take your suggestions, your corrections, and your comments, and even your fan challenges. So send them our way, and we might make it a future episode. Fan challenges, keep in mind, I don't want to see anything after the year 2000. Come on, that's just like picking on them at that point. You got to leave a little time. Sometimes things take a little time to become a classic and need time to gestate. And honestly, if it's gotten 30, 40 years or more, I think we've given it enough time.
Yep.
Let us know where to find it and make a quick pitch to justify why you think it might be worthy of it, and we'll let you know whether we'll do it or not and put it in the queue at some point. Also, if you are a horror fan, Sam and I both just joined a new horror social media site called Slasher. So you can follow me and Sam. I am Invader_J over on Slasher, and Sam, you are...
IOTR Sam.
That's right. So you can follow us there. And it is all horror fans. And what a cool community. I've only been there a short time, and it's already a really fun social media place to hang out. So
nice.
If you dig horror stuff, that's your jam and you're listening to us and you're always like chomping at the bit for the next horror thing, Slasher might be the place for you. And,
wow. Trish is going to give it a try too.
That's right. And Trish is definitely going to follow me and Sam, right?
Yes. IOTR Sam. Invader J.
Yeah, Invader underscore yes. J. You know that little line that makes a space?
Yes.
Invader yes. underscore J.
Invader underscore J.
Help get more earballs on the show by letting everybody know where to find us. We're on all your favorite podcast providers, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and so many more. But if you can't remember, just send them our way to our website. Sam, give them the address.
It is invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
And over there, you'll find all the archives for all our episodes, as well as tons of links to other podcast providers. We're on all the best ones, probably some we don't even remember anymore. And there's also a little store tab. We got merch. We have such cool merch. Mm-hmm. You need some of that merch, and you should click on that button. It'll take you to our TeePublic store, and over there you're going to find some awesome designs by the Invader crew. And we've got like Trish's favorite, inspired by a story of Angry Fish. So now we've got the Angry Fish poster line, which are really fun and cool, designed by Sam. We've got the...
Very good.
Yeah, we've got the Jeff Omega poster line. I shouldn't call it the Jeff Omega poster line. Now it's just the Invader poster line, because Sam's done a lot of those as well. Those were our two Photoshop guys, and I did the meager microphone skull masks, but they did turn out really
well. It's very good.
Thank you.
And put some stuff, put some of our stuff on you. It's good.
That's right. You can get t-shirts and hoodies and posters and mugs and pins and stickers and PPE masks, whole bunch of stuff. Go check it out. Our TeePublic, again, just hit the store tab over on our Wix site. Sam, you're away next week, aren't you?
I am.
Oh, no. So that is going to be the Trish and Jay show, and those are kind of a while. We haven't done one in a long, long time, just me and Trish.
We haven't. Yeah. We haven't. It's going to be fun.
Have we done one to just you and I since, like, Abbott Costello Meet Frankenstein?
I don't.
That's
didn't
the last
we do
one
a shark
I remember.
One?
Oh, yeah. We did the shark week. After that. We did Shark Week.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you did the slasher episode.
Yes.
I wasn't there for that one.
That's Sharks right. and Slashers.
We have a tendency to do these open specials. I don't know what.
Wasn't Jeff there for Slasher? I think Jeff was there for Slasher.
I don't remember. I'm going to have to go listen to our old episodes in our archives.
Yeah.
Sam, where can I find the archives?
You can find them on envisionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
Yay. I'm glad there's a central place where I can find all of our old episodes.
That's really handy, guys.
Can we make that our promo?
We'll just have clipped that. we're very outdated on our promo.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll Trish and I will catch you next week. I've been Jason.
Mm-hmm. I'm always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And we are out of here.
Hunting and killing babies doesn't seem to be my specialty.
So what do you want, a transfer?
Well, my wife's in her eighth month, and ever since I started on this, she hasn't been getting any rest. Me being so involved really brings it home. Besides, I guess you know we lost our last baby.
Look, you're lucky you don't have grown kids nowadays. People without children don't realize how lucky they are.